All right.
Blog Talk Radio.
I know what you're going through.
I've been there.
Nobody else I know has been there.
It's not easy being a veteran.
Coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan, I had been so excited to come home.
But it's harder than I thought.
Not everyone understands that.
Things at home may be as you left them.
But you don't feel the same.
Join us at communityofveterans.org.
And connect to others who are going through the same thing.
Because no one knows what it's like to come back unless they were there.
Brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Good morning and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm your host, Joy Keyes, and I want to thank you so much for waking up this morning. Beautiful weather today in Philadelphia. I'm telling you, we have been praying for this weather because it was like so many heat waves that I can't even count them. So I'm glad that we're going to have beautiful weather today. Please get out after the show and enjoy the weather. But this morning I'm speaking with Wes Moore. He's a youth advocate, Army combat veteran, business leader. He was one of Ebony Magazine's top 30 leaders under 30 for 2007. Crane's New York Business 40 Under 40 Rising Stars in 2009. This is his first book, The Other Wes Moore. He was born in Baltimore, and the other Wes Moore was also born in Baltimore. So today we're going to be talking about the fates and what happened with the two different Wes Moores. And I was just speaking with him right before the show. Good morning, Wes.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you again for calling in today and sharing your story and also the other Wes Moore story today with the listeners. We just talked a little bit earlier about a couple of words that came to my mind when I started reading the book. Also, I'll let you know I cried. I read the book, and there's a certain part I cried. It broke my heart because I have a younger brother, and I always think about fate and choices, and he's 26 now, and I always tell him, you're so fortunate. You are not in prison. Do you know how fortunate you are? You are not in prison. You know, so we talked about choices, chances. We talked about fate and intention. Those are four words that I mentioned to you earlier. But before we just start, I just want to read a part from your book. You were meeting with the other Wes Moore, as you have several times, and this was about, when did you feel like you become a man? So let me just read a little bit from this section. When my conversations with Wes had begun years earlier, we said only what we thought the other wanted to hear, what the other needed to hear. But over time, it was hard to keep up the act, and our conversations drifted toward an almost therapeutic honesty. When did you feel like you become a man? Wes asked me, a troubled look on his face. And this is you responding, I think it was when I first felt accountable to people other than myself, when I first cared that my actions mattered to people other than just me. I answered quickly and confidently, but I wasn't sure of what I was talking about. When did I actually become a man? There was no official ceremony that brought my childhood to an end. Instead, crises and other circumstances presented me with adult-sized responsibilities and obligations that I had to meet one way or another. So, do you still hold that answer? When do you think you became a man? Does that hold true, becoming responsible for others?
I still think it holds true. And, you know, one thing that I realized is that that process of entering into manhood is so jarring for so many young boys who are going through this process and trying to navigate it. And the challenge is they feel like they're navigating it on their own. They feel like they have to go through this process, without support that are necessary in order to make the process happen successfully. And that's why I think we see so many young people who end up, going through that process as successfully as we would like. There isn't a way, to really see it, particularly when you have situations where you have communities that are growing up and, with over 50%. Single parent relationships where, over 50% of young people are growing up without an understanding of who their father is. So I think that process can be extraordinarily confusing for a young person when we don't have that type of structure and we don't have that type of stability involved in how they navigated it.
Well, I think that's one of the things you talk about in your book throughout. You're talking about your life and your choices. And let's just mention to the audience, he didn't always make the right choice. Yes, he's a veteran, he's a business leader, he was a Rhodes Scholar, he's been to Africa, he's been, all over the place. But once you pick up, again, you should pick this up, The Other Wes Moore, One Name, Two Fates, you definitely need to pick this up, because that goes back to the words we talked about earlier, choices, chances.
Yeah.
He had many chances. Some of the funny things you were doing in school, you were cutting classes. What was that
about?
Oh,
yeah. No, I mean, literally, I mean, you talk about, you know, truancy to the point that you're picking and choosing which days you wanted to go. You know, I had a whole schedule set out as to which days I just wouldn't show up to school. And it's amazing because, you know, one thing, even as I went through the process of this book, I said the only way that this book could be helpful and useful, which was the goal, which was the intention, was that if I was able to be honest. And it meant being honest about my own life. And as you said, you know, I think people can look at where my life has ended up thus far and where Wes's life has ended up and make assumptions. And they can say, well, you know, I'm sure he was always like this, or Wes was always like that, or whatever. One thing I tried to do with the book was to show just how little separated us, you know, coming up, and how little separates all of us from another life altogether. And the more we decide to actually peel back the onion on another life, I think the more we will uncover just how little that difference sometimes is. And that's when the more I learned about Wes and the more stories and anecdotes I heard from Wes, the more I realized how frighteningly similar they were to my own life. And then that's really wanted to make me go through that process of exploring, so what were those decision points? What were those choices? What were the ramifications for those choices? And then who were the people in our lives who were helping us to make those choices?
Definitely. Well, one of the things you mentioned earlier is about single parenthood and fathers, and there's I just want to read a section from your book where you speak about your father. And also there's another section where you speak about the other Wes's father. So I'm just going to read this part here. Hey, main man, do you mind if I come in? I'm told that he had many terms of endearment for me, but main man is the one I remember. I didn't even look up, but nodded slowly. He had to duck to clear the low doorway. He picked me up, and as he sat on the bed, placed me on his lap. As I sat there, all of my anxiety released. I could not have felt safer, more secure. He began to explain what I did wrong and why my mother was so angry. Main man, you just can't hit people, and particularly women. You must defend them, not fight them. Do you understand? I nodded and then asked, is mommy mad at me? No, mommy loves you, like I love you. She just wants you to do the right thing. My father and I sat talking for another 5 minutes before he led me downstairs to apologize to my sister and my mother. With each tiny step I took with him, my whole hand wrapped tighter around his middle finger. I tried to copy his walk, his expression. I was his main man. He was my protector.
Yeah. It was, you know, one.
Your mind. Yeah, talk to me about that.
Well, you know, it's and honestly, and even hearing you read that, you know, the back that the words that I wrote, it brings me back to a place that you know, in many cases, you know, you talk about that difficulty of single parenthood and the difficulty of fatherlessness and what it means. And it's something that you never fully recover from. I don't care how far separated you are from it. I don't care what the reasons are behind it. I don't care how comfortable you think you are with it. Because even hearing you read it right now, just, you know, it brings you back to a place that's difficult. You know, Wes and I had a conversation where we're talking about fatherhood in the book.
Yes.
And
he had a different opinion. Tell the audience about his feelings about
He did, where, you know, we're talking about fatherhood, and I say to him, we're talking about our fathers, and he says, listen, your father wasn't there because he couldn't be, and my father wasn't there because he chose not to be. So therefore, we're going to mourn their absence in different ways. And I told Wes, I thought that was a very good point, and I told him I agree with him. But I think one thing we both also agreed on is, regardless of the reason for that absence, regardless of the reason for that hole that lives inside of a young person who grows up where that first understanding of manhood isn't there in their life, that creates a void that in many cases young people will try to fill in quite honestly dangerous and unproductive ways. And so so that was something that I think really that lack of understanding, that fear really eventually turned into anger, and it turned into pain, and it turned into a larger apathy, which I think really fueled a lot of the challenges that I think in this case that both boys really had as we were coming up.
Well, one of the things that the other Westmore speaks in terms of being a protector for his mother, you know, being the man of the house for his mother. And I think that fueled, in my opinion, some of the choices he made. And I also spoke to you earlier. I was watching a show about the Buddha, and people are probably like, what is she talking about, the Buddha now? But One of the things that was mentioned was about desire and ignorance, and I mentioned that to you. And I think desire makes us or pushes us as a catalyst for us to make certain choices that may or may not be in the best interest of ourselves. You know, in the other Westmore's case, please, again, pick up this book because, like, this Westmore is telling you, their lives are very similar, and it's like a thin line that really, you know, separated where each of them are today. But the desire to, you know, have the best shoes, the desire to be able to provide for his mother, I think kind of pushed him out there in the street. And let me tell you, the other Westmore that is currently in jail had people telling him to do the right thing. He had people that wanted to support him in the right path. But he made his own choice.
And,
you know?
And that's where I think you see that where, you know, when Wes and I are even talking about choices and chances. And, you know, how, you know, he was saying that, you know, how both of us, you know, did a lot of wrong things and both of us had second chances. And then I said back to him, yeah, but it's important to distinguish and it's important to understand when second chances become last chances. And and I think when, as a child, you go through life and you just assume everyone is going to give you another chance, right? We make a mistake and people forgive you. And you can make the same mistake and people forgive you. But then at some point, that wears really thin. And at some point, our choices matter, and our choices end up becoming having huge ramifications. You know, I was talking with a cousin of mine, and he's got a young son, and he says one thing, and he said something to his son, my young cousin. I thought it was a great point. He said, "Listen, every day life is all about choices, and every day our choices decide which doors will be open for us and which doors will be closed for us. And sometimes we don't even understand as we're making some of those choices how big the consequences are. But it's the truth. And how exactly that we frame out our choices and how exactly we intervene in the lives of others as they're going through the process of making those choices becomes incredibly important, not just to their future, but to our own future as well."
Definitely, definitely. I want to read another part. This is in reference to the other Westmore. And just to reemphasize, people might thinking, you know, their preconceptions of, well, you know, he's in jail because, you know, he was always like that. No, that's not the case. And he had other desires and other concerns. And this is when he was talking about building a house for his daughter. And this is where I cried. This is right after this point is where I cried, Wes, when I was reading the story. Because even though I knew the story, I got sucked in so much. I was like, oh, great, he's doing this, you know, thing. But anyway, let me read this part here. As Wes thought about what he wanted to make, the image of his 5-year-old daughter came to him. For much of her life, Wes had been gone, whether at Job Corps or behind bars. He had missed many of the milestones in her growing up. The situation had become even more tenuous. Cheryl's drug problems, unfortunately the daughter's mother had become a drug addict, had become more consuming and overt. But I'm going to skip a little bit here. But one of the teachers asked him, what is Wes going to make while he's in Job Corps and he's in this carpentry class? And all he could think about was his daughter. And without a thought about what he was taking on, he announced that he wanted to build her a house. And the teacher raised his eyebrows and said, interesting, a small house? Wes looked back at the teacher. But in his mind, he was looking at the house he wanted to build. No, a big house enough for her to get in, a house to protect her. The other people in the room looked at one another and giggled. But Wes did not flinch. His teacher smiled. Great. I look forward to seeing it. And it took him about 7 months. He sandpapered and hammered and made this beautiful house for his daughter. And he graduated from Job Corps program. And he had several jobs afterwards. And he was just struggling. He was really struggling. And this is where I cry, Wes, that, you know, he wanted to provide for his family. He wanted to take care of his kids. He was happy. And this also brings me to the point of learning styles. Somehow that carpentry, you know, he needed something tactile maybe in his life to like, you know, be a spark. Some kids are readers. Some kids are music. Some kids are visual. You know, so when we think about children, you say, oh, they're not doing well in school or they're not focused or they don't want to pay attention. Every child learns differently. He went to Job Corps and this carpentry just sparked something in his life. You know, so we really need to think about that. What comes to your mind when you hear me read about that section?
Well, you know, that was actually one of the most difficult sessions that I had with Wes. And when I go see Wes, it's always in hour increments because the prison will not allow you to be there any longer. And the way I would do interviews with Wes is, you know, you're never allowed to bring any pens or paper or tape recorders or anything. into the prison with you. They search you twice before you go in there, as they search him before he goes into the visiting room. And so I would literally have to just sit there with Wes and ask him questions and then run back to the car where I had a tape recorder waiting for me, and then I would just sit there and regurgitate everything that he just finished telling me so I could have a record of it. And I remember we spent an entire session on the Job Corps. And how when he left the Job Corps, he was inspired and he was emboldened, and how he wanted to ask himself, you know, say, this is the type of life that I want to live. I'm tired of the drugs. I'm tired of being involved in it. I'm tired of attending funerals of friends. I just want to do something different. And he went out working different odd jobs, making barely minimum wage, you know, barely over minimum wage for all the jobs. And he had four children. He had, you know, two mothers of his children. And he decided that the easier option would be to go back to the streets, because that's how he could best take care of his family and best take care of all of his children. Now, you know, in no way am I, you know, I'm not doing it, making anything to make, you know, people feel, you know, sympathetic, or, you know, because Wes had choices to make, and that's the choice he decided to make. But I think we're missing the point if we don't understand why he felt those choices had to be made, and what the challenges that were going on, and why he felt that this was a reasonable option for him to then go back to the streets. And this scene, this was really important for me to include inside the book, because even though in the first pages the reader knows the final conclusion, in the first pages the reader understands what ends up happening to Wes and what ends up happening to me. Mm-hmm. But I want to take the reader on a journey. I want to help the reader to understand that it's not that simple. It's not that easy. And if we're just willing to look a little bit deeper, I think we can not just uncover some of the challenges that are taking place in so many communities, but actually be able to do something about it, to be part of a solution, because we've actually, you know, decided that exploration is not glorification.
Definitely, definitely. Well, let me just tell the audience that you do have a website, and the website address is theotherwesmore.com. Again, that's theotherwesmore.com. Also, I'm giving away some of your books, so I want to tell them, if you want to get a copy, a free copy of The Other Wes Moore, you need to email me who is the author of the book The Jungle. It's a famous Baltimorean. Again, who is the author of the book The Jungle? You can email me at SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. Again, SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. Now, let's talk about some of your positive experiences that happened in your life. One of them, there's some funny parts in this book. When you were at military school and you did not want to wake up, let me tell you, people, you got to pick up this book, because he just thought he was big, bad, and bold. He was not getting out of bed. He was sleeping. What? You talking to me? They came and grabbed his A double bleep bleep out of the bed. So tell the audience about that part. You were just thinking you were too cool.
And I was only 12 years old, and I remember that wake up call. It came at, you know, 5:30 in the morning. There was heavy metal music playing. They were blasting. They were, you know, banging trash cans and yelling and screaming. And it was my first morning at this military school. And my roommate, he jumps out of the bottom bunk, and I'm laying on the top bunk. And, you know, he's saying, "Hey Moore," you know, my last name's like, "Hey Moore, we got to get up. We got to go in the hallway." And I look at him, and I look at the clock, and the clock says 5:30. And I said, "Man, it is 5:30 in the morning." I said, "Tell me, come get me right at 8 o'clock. You know, I should be ready to go about this." So he runs down the hallway, and I mean, and again, you know, my chain of command eventually come into my room, and yeah, they pick that mattress up off that bunk, and they turn the mattress over, and there I am falling 5 feet to the hard floor. And that was my first introduction to this military school. And I mean, I hated every minute of that place. I literally ran away, you know, 5 times in the first 4 days.
Oh my God! Yeah,
from that school.
Oh
my God! I mean, they couldn't keep me in that. But every time they turned around, I was trying to run out the gates. And but you know, it was amazing, because I couldn't stand it there. I hated my mother for making me have this mandatory year there. But you know, she made a tough decision, and then at that point, my mother decided something where she said, "Listen, you know, I'm not your friend. I'm your mother." And she said, you know, she said to me, she's like, "Listen, if I needed more friends, you know, I didn't have you because I needed more friends." So she knew that at that point in my life, you know, I was going through a lot of challenges and a lot of difficulties. And I was at a real crossroads, and tough decisions had to be made, and that was the one that she felt was the right one for me. But even more importantly than just pulling me out of the Bronx and moving to a different area or taking me out of Baltimore, more importantly was the psychological change that started happening there, where I started to feel accountable for more than just me. I started to understand the importance of leadership and responsibility. And I think at that point I was actually really able to take some of the natural qualities that I had and things that I enjoyed and actually turn them into something positive. So it started all to make sense at that point. And, you know, so I think, you know, for military school, for me, even though I couldn't stand when I first went there, ended up becoming, you know, just an extraordinary experience. And it's actually one right out in, you know, right on the suburbs of Pennsylvania, Valley Forge Military Academy.
Yes. Well, I think that's one thing, key sentence there was talking about your mother saying she's not your friend. And I think for a lot of single mothers who have young men, and I, this is not every single mother, because I know plenty, and I've actually ran single parent associations to help single parents, that you're making the young man your mate in a non-sexual way. You're making this young man your mate, and he is not. He is your child. And as Wes said, his mom had to make a very tough decision. And I know in the story, in the book, you talk about you didn't think, oh, she ain't going to send me away. I ain't going north.
There was no way. I thought she needed. She needed. And as I said in the book, I thought she needed me too much. It is like, exactly. But again, you go to the psychology of a 12-year-old to think, oh, she needs me too much. There's no way she could send me away.
Exactly.
But it's really amazing, because sometimes I think, you know, and I see, and again, quite honestly, I see with, you know, like even a lot of my friends where, you know, they're in times you're trying to be a friend to your child, thinking that that's the best thing for them. And you almost want to say, you know, listen, that's the worst thing for them. You know what? Because, you know, one thing I think I got from the military school, you know, first was this idea of, you know, this was really the first place that I had that concentrated every day and almost at a peer level male intervention in my life. You know, I had my grandfather, who, as you saw the book, who was extraordinarily instrumental in my life.
That's one thing I definitely wanted to mention, is that you did have other male role models that were doing some very positive things. So whether
absolutely.
You absorbed it at the moment, I think it was sinking in your head somehow that there was other possibilities.
Absolutely. And, you know, my grandfather had uncles and cousins and just family friends who were there. But the ability to just see it and have it to really make sense was something that I think happened, you know, a little later on. But, you know, one thing that my mother always knew, and my mother decided as she was raising me, she said, listen, you know, as a parent, you've got one shot to get this right. You've got one shot to really make sense to that young person, to that life that you know, was a part of you and will always be a part of you. And sometimes it means making tough decisions. And I think for her, you know, that decision to send me off was one of them. But I think, you know, again, you know, in retrospect, you know, I love her for it, because I know it was probably even more difficult on her than it was on me.
Now, again, I want to mention your website, theotherwesmore.com. Please check out the website. It talks about the book, where you're going to be appearing next. Also, I'm giving away some copies of The Other Wes Moore for free. But if you want a copy of that, you need to email me, who is the author of the book The Jungle? Again, who is the author of the book The Jungle? And you can email me at SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. Also, if you're listening, there was something going on with the chat room. So if you want to call in, the call-in number is 646-929-0368. And if you have a question, you can press the number 1 on your keypad. One of the things that really, what do you say to young people nowadays? I mean, to me, I feel like kids have so many choices, so many opportunities to excel. So, but then there's the issue of going back to desires. Well, I want it now. I want it microwave fast. What do we tell the young men this day? What do you tell them?
I think one thing we have to tell them is that patience is a virtue, but we also have to understand when patience is a virtue and when patience is a detriment. And I think it's a very important distinction that we must draw, is that when you think about what exactly it is that you want from your life, a lot of those things are going to take time to mature. They always do. They always have. But as long as you're willing to hold on, you have more people fighting for you than I think you even possibly realize as you're going through this journey. But you've got to be prepared to accept the help. You've got to be prepared to actually make use of the help and to have it be something that's going to be worthwhile and useful. And I think you have a lot of people who are willing to fight for you and are willing to work for you, but you've got to show that reciprocation. You've got to meet them halfway. But I think the other thing that's important when I say, you know, patience can also be a detriment is, I think for so many young people, you know, there's also this idea, well, oh, it can always wait. It can wait till tomorrow. It can wait till next year. I don't have to get myself together right now. I want to enjoy myself now. Well, when you think about life that way, it becomes very dangerous as well, because none of us are promised anything. None of us are promised a tomorrow. None of us are promised a next year. So it becomes incredibly important to make your right decisions now and to make it matter that you are here now, because you never know when that time is going to run out. You never know, as I said before, when those second chances become those last chances.
Definitely. I think right now is the time. If you're listening to the show, pick up the phone right now and call a young person that you know who might be going through something. Or even if they're not going through anything, just say, hey, I'm just thinking about you. You know, right. People sometimes don't realize how much a phone call can mean to another person. Just picking up the phone and telling somebody you're thinking about them. Wow, that person is thinking about me, and then, you know, they're busy doing everything else, but they had a moment to call me. Or if you're listening to the show right now, or you listen to the show after it's archived, take a moment to maybe, you know, look around you. Are there any community organizations out there dealing with children? Do you have an hour of time that maybe you can just go speak to them about what you do in your life? If you're doing some very positive things, share that with them so they can see a physical embodiment of, you know that career or that path.
Joy, it is so important. And you know, one of the things that I'm actually most proud of over the book is actually the back of the book, where there's a list of over 200 organizations.
Yes.
You know, there's a list of over 200 organizations around the country who are doing the work. And these are organizations that are all vetted, and they'd all love to hear from you. And so whether you want to go there, whether you need to go there for help or you want to go there to help, these are all organizations who would love to receive a phone call from you. And in fact, a portion of all book proceeds for the life of the book are going to two nonprofit organizations. One is an organization called City Year, which is, you know, based out of Boston, but it's a national organization that gives young people a year of public service and really help them understand they're part of something bigger than themselves. And the other organization is the U.S. Dream Academy, which is based out of Maryland, but it's a national organization. And what it does, it helps out children of the incarcerated, so kids who have one or both parents who are behind bars. And so the importance of getting involved is huge, because whether we realize it or not, and like you said, it can be something as simple as whether you're giving part of your resources or your time or whatever, you're making a huge difference, and not just in one life, but in the lives of many.
That is something I definitely wanted to mention, is this young man has, like you said, more than 200 resources in the back, and you can go again to his website, theotherwesmore.com, to get an updated list. But that is one of the really key issues of this book. Okay, we talked about the one Westmore and the other Westmore, and he made this choice and that choice. But there are a whole bunch of organizations that you can get involved in state by state. So don't say, oh, well, you know, I live in Massachusetts. There's nothing there. I live in Oregon. There's nothing there. I live in Seattle. I'm telling you, he got every state. So you don't have any excuse. Just pick up the book,
right.
The other Westmore. And if you think you have a little bit of time, or you want to make a phone call, or you want to donate some money, there's a place in your neighborhood that you can donate. I want to take this caller real quick. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. It's Mary Ellen from For Justice Now. How are you?
I'm good. We have about 2 minutes. What are some of your comments?
Yes, I know. I just wanted to say another great show. Wes, you're doing great work. I saw you, I think it was on Oprah. I have a nonprofit organization that helps women and families that are incarcerated. So I really admire your work, and I think you're doing great things. And Joy, as always, another great show. I just wanted to say that.
Thank
you so much for that comment. And I was going to say, too, if you go to the website, because actually one thing we're doing, as I wanted to mention as well, is we're compiling, continuing to update the list. So if yours is an organization that you think, should be highlighted inside of the book, you know, please send that information to the website, because we'd love to highlight it not just in the paperback, but also on the website as well.
Thank you so much for calling in. We only have a minute left, but please go to his website, The Other Westmore, and contact him with your nonprofit organization, Mary Ellen, because I think that will be a wonderful opportunity for you to get more volunteers. But I want to thank you so much for coming on, Westmore. And I also want to thank the Other Westmore, because his life story, I think, will help other young men.
Well, thank you so much for your time, for your energy, and for your devotion, to really educating, educating your constituency. I think this was fantastic. And I tell you, when I talked to Wes about it, one of the things I really enjoyed doing, I've received over 1,300 letters and emails and messages from people and parents and students and teachers who just tell me how the book has affected them. And one of the things I'd like to do is actually send some of them to Wes, just to let him know that his life is making a difference. And it's helping people to make better choices and better decisions. So I really appreciate your time, and I applaud all your efforts.
Thank you so much for coming on, and I hope you have a wonderful Saturday, okay?
Bless you. You too. Thank you so much.
Okay, all the best. Thank you so much for listening to today's show. You can follow me on twitter.com/joykeys. You can also become a fan on Facebook. Stay tuned. I'm doing a show at 11:30 with an African-American paleontologist, David Wilcox. Yes, paleontologist. So stay tuned. Thank you.